Hello and welcome to another edition of the End Zone Podcast. My name is Eric Jensen and I am joined today by two new friends. Mark, oh man, like we talked about 15 minutes pre-recording and I never got either of your last names. So Mark, blank, last name. What's your last name, buddy, and how you doing?
My last name is Maganya. Eric, I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having us on. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, for sure. Always great to have new people on. And then, Phil, what's your last name?
It's kind of weird, but it's Schwegler.
Schwegler.
Yeah, everyone usually just calls me Schweg.
That's a dope name. I like
appreciate
that.
Appreciate
it. Phil Schweg. All right, I like it. Phil Schwegler. All right, cool. Phil Schwegler and Mark McGonaghy?
No. Maganya.
Maganya.
There you go. Maganya.
Maganya. All right. All the way from California and Tampa, respectively.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
but
sir.
You ended up being Bucks fans, I guess. What is each of your connections with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I guess? Like, how did someone, like, Mark, were you born in Florida? Like, how does someone who lives in California end up with interesting connection to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who I feel are a very regional team?
You know what, man? It's crazy because you don't know how often I get asked that question. Being out here in California, as many sports teams as we have available to choose from, people are always asking me why the Bucks. It's a pretty simple story. Basically, Pops, when I was young, used to watch a lot of football. He was a Dolphins fan, and he used to always tell me that I would pick the team that was winning because, you know, I was the same kid that we all were, picking the bandwagon fan, picking whoever was winning at the time. So 2002 rolls around, I'm a little bit older, and I said, Pops, whoever wins this Super Bowl right here, that's going to be my team. Raiders, Bucks, everybody remembers that. So it is a good thing that the Buccaneers won. And so I've been a Bucks fan ever since then, and I really just stuck to it from then on and kind of made it my own, really have taken off into some serious deep diving into the fandom of the Buccaneers and everything that is, and then joining Twitter a couple years ago and being a part of a couple different circles and a couple different writing communities that have really grown that fandom into something different, some different animal or beast, as they
That's
say.
That's awesome to hear about.
Yeah, so.
Well, Phil, obviously, are you from Florida, born and raised, or have you kind of had a circuitous path to this Bucks team as well?
No, I was actually born in Hillsborough County, right here in Tampa. Grew up mostly on the east coast of Florida, though, over in New Smyrna Beach. I mean, it was either Buccaneers, Jaguars, and Dolphins. And when I was growing up, the Buccaneers were a better team. That's what my dad watched. That's what I watched. And I've been following them ever since. Like Mark said, me and him both have been in different media outlets, writing, just trying to make our own path into the Bucks, I guess, writing media, I guess you would call it right now.
Yeah, for sure. You guys were telling me a little bit before the podcast that the Bucks have a very interesting kind of fandom circle on Twitter, which I feel is really weird. Being part of kind of around more of, I work for a site where we have a lot of, I guess maybe it's a product of teams that have been on top a little bit longer, but seeing like how the Patriots, the Steelers, the Cowboys, the Broncos, the Raiders, the Chargers fan, honestly, pretty much every fan base acts toward their teams. No one, in my estimation, takes a realistic approach toward watching their teams. But it's very strange to hear about a fan base being like uber pessimistic toward their team, though. That's kind of what you guys described. Is that like an accurate description?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's been like so long since we've been in the playoffs. A lot of people, you know, lose hope every year if something happens, like Doug Martin's suspension, like there
so
goes
sad.
The season, you know. It's like you can't make them happy sometimes. But I mean, there still are those hardcore fans, though, that they live, breathe, and die Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I consider myself one of those.
Yeah, there's a lot of hardcore fans out there, and I think kind of the difficult part, and not the difficult part, but rather the fun part, I guess is a better way of saying it, is the emotion that goes with cheering for a team, right? So you have your highs, you have your lows, and everything in between. And Twitter really gives everybody a platform to display that. So you have your fans that are, you know, Jameis got suspended. You know, Phil mentioned the suspension from Doug from last year, but I mean, you know, Jameis is gonna be suspended at the beginning of this year. Some people have already written the season off, and there's others that are like, look, we can go 2-1 in those games with Fitzpatrick and still be in it. So I mean, you just get, I think you just get a very broad spectrum of fans, especially on Twitter. Twitter allows us to kind of see those personalities come out and all the emotions from cheering for a team. I'm sure you know, Eric, that it's you know, cheering for your team, it's like, you know, Sunday comes, game day comes, you're into the game, you're yelling, absolutely, you're jumping up and down, you know what I'm saying? So it's, I think you just kind of see that on Twitter a little more obviously, I guess.
Obviously. So I wanted to touch on the Jameis Winston suspension, but let's get me up to date. I follow the NFL pretty closely. I thought that the suspension was for 4 games, or do the Bucs have their bye week on week 4? What's the deal with that? I know you had said 2-1. Is he only suspended for 3 games? I thought from everything I had read that he's out for 4 games to start this season.
No, yeah, just those first 3 games. That's what it came down after the NFL finished their investigation. They never put out their investigation, their findings, and everything like that. So they just handed him down 3 games, and that's pretty much all we know as far as what the NFL found and how far as that goes.
Yeah. That seems, oh yeah, 3 games. I don't know why or where I heard 4 from, but
the 4 is so common, you know, yeah, what I mean? Maybe that's, yeah, kind of why the 4-game suspension is kind of a common one.
I'm glad I figured that out.
Although, realistically, stupid, they did say they found, like, he sexually assaulted somebody, I'm pretty sure that the suspension would have been more than 3 games, you know? That's kind of what the weird thing, the weird vibe that everybody's getting is, what did the NFL find if they only gave him 3 games? So,
right. Yeah. All right, so let's kind of talk about that Jameis Winston suspension a little bit. Like, how much does that hurt this Buccaneers team this year?
I think it, Mark. Okay, sorry, go ahead, Mark.
Sorry, yeah, but my bad. I forgot that we have not been doing this as long as, that we have not. This is bad podcasting by me. I need the point guard better.
Okay.
Off to a rollicking start. We're gonna we'll throw this to Phil because he started answering it. But I'll give you guys some prompts. I apologize.
Yeah,
that's on
okay.
me.
No worries.
That's
no worries,
on me.
Sorry.
That's a shaky start by me.
You're
that's
good.
On me.
No problem, man. So I mean. Jameis being gone for 3 games, yes, it's going to hurt the team, especially the chemistry he has with Cameron Brate, which is one of the biggest red zone threats, I think, in the NFL. A couple years back, he led the leagues in touchdown receptions. And then his chemistry with Mike Evans and DeSean Jackson, which is kind of starting to click a little more from the offseason practices. And then the rookie Chris Godwin. So the real thing Tampa needs to do is they need to come together as a team, and that defense, I think, needs to be the anchor for that team and help Ryan Fitzpatrick manage the offense and keep points on the board and prevent the other team from scoring, because that's how you win football.
Mark, would you kind of have similar thoughts to that or something different?
Yeah, no. I mean, pretty much the same thing. Really, the key is that the defense. I mean, the defense needs to prove itself to be what we have heard that it was going to be. I mean, we know about the defensive line improvements, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit later, but Jason Pierre-Paul, right, Mitch Unrein, Bo Allen, Vinny Curry, you bring those guys over next to Gerald McCoy, you expect the defense to perform better. And if they're not performing better, then there's clearly some issue, because the defensive line was a serious issue last year, and we made the, or Jason Light, I should say, made the necessary adjustments to fix those issues. So yeah, I think it boils down to the defense. Does it hurt the team to have Jameis suspended the first three games? Absolutely. But the defense should be able to carry the team to 2 wins. I really do expect a 2-1 start. I'd like to be optimistic about it and expect that 2-1 start with the defense playing well and really carrying us to that next level for when Jameis does come back. But it does impact them, but it shouldn't impact them in the way that everybody's talking about, how, like we talked about earlier, a lot of people are writing the whole season off already, and I don't think that's right either. So,
do you think that, I know that in the national media, this has kind of been a a take that has quietly kind of grabbed some more ground. Like, you look at the Arizona Cardinals game last year, and this is what everyone points to, and you look at the way Ryan Fitzpatrick performed.
Yeah.
Do you think that if for some reason Ryan Fitzpatrick can win to, like, all three of those games and look like a quality quarterback in that offense, that maybe Jameis Winston doesn't get that starting job back immediately? Because I feel like there's a little bit of Jameis Winston fatigue at this point, kind of, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, I wouldn't say people classify him as a bust, but I don't think a lot of people in the national media see him as this franchise quarterback, which brings me to this question. If you take away all the off-field stuff, and you purely look at how Jameis Winston has performed on the field, we'll start with you, Mark. How would you grade that pick of Jameis Winston at today?
You know,
putting all the off-field stuff aside.
Right. Yeah, and you know, putting all the off-field stuff aside, I think he was a good pick. I'd give it a B pick. 11,636 yards in the 3 years that he's played so far. 69 touchdowns to only 44 interceptions.
Nice.
And you're looking at the first quarterback to have back-to-back 4,000-yard seasons to start his career, right? In his rookie year and then in 2016. So he really has looked really good. But the key has been when he's had a run game. I feel like when he has a run game in Dirk Cutter's system with the play-action pass working, he can really, really look good. And, kind of addressing the first part that you talked about, what happens if Fitzpatrick performs really well. I think that this organization, Jason Light, Jameis Winston, Dirk Cutter, I think that their fates are all kind of intertwined. So I really don't foresee if Fitzpatrick does carry us to three wins. I think they clap for him, give him a standing ovation, and give Jameis the ball in week five, because I just don't think that they see it. I think that they see that the organization as a whole is tied to that draft pick. That's the guy that they took in 2015. That's the guy that they've built the team around. And I think they want to prove that they made the right decision. I think so far he has proven statistically through his career that he can be a good quarterback on the field. And of course, it is tough to eliminate the off-the-field stuff, but when you're talking about strictly on the field, I think he's proven himself to be an exceptional young quarterback. So we'll see how it goes. He was also the second youngest quarterback to get to 10,000 yards. He was only 4 days behind Drew Bledsoe. So, I mean, statistically, it's there. It's a good pick, I think, statistically. I'd go ahead and give it a B, I think.
Right. What about you, Phil?
I pretty much agree with Mark. I'd give it a B plus. I'm not being a homer because I'm a Florida State fan at all. but definitely, they brought him in to be the star of the team, the franchise player, the guy that they're going to put on the side of Raymond James Stadium, which he's been there since he's been here. So he's grown since his first rookie game, throwing that pick six as his first pass in the NFL. Pretty sure one other guy did that, Hall of Famer right now. But statistically, he's grown. This especially coming back off this injury this past year, that shoulder injury, he came back and he was playing like a totally different quarterback. His passer rating kept going up week after week. He averaged almost two touchdowns a game, and even won a game against the Saints, who were still fighting to win the division after throwing three interceptions and threw that beautiful pass to Chris Godwin. So I feel the team is very invested in him. I don't feel like they're going to get rid of him anytime soon, but I do believe that he needs to prove it. Like you were saying, that he's not getting much national attention. He needs to prove himself this year and say, you know, I am the face of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I am going to take this team to the playoffs. I'm going to take him to the division championship and ultimately the Super Bowl, because that's what they brought him in here for. You don't pick a guy number one overall to run your team just to, you know, sit behind somebody else and learn, unless you're Aaron Rodgers, but he didn't get picked first overall. But my point is they bring him back after Ryan Fitzpatrick is done, because that's his job. He's the backup quarterback. You expect him to win a few games in times of need.
Okay, let me play devil's advocate, if I may, really quickly. I'm going to give that pick a C, and here's why. I can't excuse the turnovers. Mm-hmm. Like, I get the picks. I'm not That's not what I get angry at. Like, you look, I hate that people criticize Blake Bortles for throwing interceptions, because if you look at, like, Bortles' interception numbers compared to the rest of the leagues, he's, like, actually right at the average amount of interceptions that a game-managing quarterback throws. They're just in bigger moments. So I think interceptions are a bad way to judge a quarterback. What I can't stand are fumbles. Yes. And the fact that Jameis Winston has 31 fumbles in his first 3 years in the league is just wild. And, like, you could say that, oh, well, every quarterback has fumbles. Who's the other guy that people point to about fumbles? Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Ben Roethlisberger. Ben Roethlisberger has been in the league since, what, 2004? That's how many years? 15 years, right? That's 15 years. He has 91 fumbles through his entire career. In 3 years of his career, Jameis Winston has over a third of the number of fumbles that Ben Roethlisberger has. Like, at some point, like, you have to learn to be able to take care of a football. And you look at Ben Roethlisberger, like, obviously he has fumbles, but you look at his highest years, like, it's 5, it's 9, it's 7, it's 6, it's 9, and they rotate year by year.
Right.
There are breaks in between. But Jameis Winston, you look at the numbers he's had, 2015, 6, 2016, 10, 2017, 15. You know what Ben Roethlisberger's career high in fumbles is for a year? 14. That is not a good sign. It is not a good sign that your quarterback is fumbling it more every year. He's taking steps in the wrong direction, and sometimes it's just like him throwing the ball up in the air in frustration when he's getting sacked. I feel like they're preventable fumbles, and I just don't understand. Like, I don't know, I get so frustrated watching Jameis Winston, because I see what you guys see too. I see an extremely talented young quarterback who has excellent pocket awareness, excellent mobility, excellent arm strength, who could potentially be a great franchise quarterback. But then I also see someone who can't hold on to the ball, who legitimately sometimes just throws the ball at the ground or up in the air when he's in trouble. Like, that, like, those are not good looks to have. Like, I don't know. That's why I get very frustrated at Jameis Winston.
It's understandable. It's understandable because, you know what, we Bucks fans get really frustrated with it too. He really has struggled with those fumbles, and those fumbles have been, like you said, they've been silly fumbles. I feel like preventable fumbles, right? But what you are looking at too, what you got to keep in mind is Jameis is a really young quarterback. He's only 24, so there's still a lot of time for him to improve. And who's to say over the next 10 years he doesn't only have another. If his career goes another 10 years, let's say he has only another 30, 35 fumbles. Now you look at the statistic over his career, right? And the statistic isn't as crazy as it is now. So, I mean, personally, I would just say that he needs more time to prove himself. He absolutely has had foolish mistakes that we all want to pull our hair out at. The same way that you feel the frustration, we feel it too. I mean, we get frustrated too because we're like, come on, guy, you got to hold on to the ball, right? But I think he's a really young quarterback. There's still a lot of time for him to learn and to grow. And we really look to see that next step this year. I mean, we're going into year 4. He's 24. And so we're expecting to see that growth this year. I think this is a big year for Jameis, but I think this is a big year for the Bucs organization as a whole. Jason Light, Dirk Cutter, Mike Smith. I think this is a big year for the Buccaneers. But like you said, yeah, we really do hope, or the Buccaneers, I'm sure, hope that Jameis limits those turnovers. But we saw that too, even in the game against Oregon and his last year in college. We saw that same fumble in that game. I mean, it's not like we haven't seen it before. Jameis tries to make plays a lot with his legs. He tries to move around, and sometimes that playmaking ability results in preventable turnovers. Definitely need to be corrected, but with his youth and the time that he has left to play, as long as he keeps his off the field issues in order, I think he can really adjust that average stat and bring it down to what we want to see as Bucks fans.
Right. So Phil, I want to throw this to you really quickly. We're going to play a little bit of Jameis Winston over-under for this year. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
Okay, cool. So let's start with yardage. And Mark, you can answer after Phil if you want. We have yardage first. Let's go with, okay, let's put it the stat at 4,090.5 yards.
You're saying that's what you think he's going to do this year?
Over under.
Oh, over under.
You take it.
I'm gonna take over. Especially coming back from the suspension and the way he played those last final games of the season. I'm gonna take the over, and I feel comfortable with that.
All right.
I think that I'm going to take the under, but ever so cautiously, and here's why. I think that this offense is really going to be predicated on the run game. So when he does come back, I think that they're going to continue to run the ball, and it won't force Jameis to have to throw as much. That's why I take the under, but honestly, I could very, very, and you know, of course, him missing three games, but I could very, very easily see the over. I don't say the under in with a negative connotation, like he's going to be under that yardage total, and you know, he's going to be terrible. I just think that the run game is going to take precedence over Jameis stepping back and throwing the ball, especially with the improved offensive line and running backs. So to
just put that number in perspective, that number is what he had in 2016, which was his career year.
Right.
And last year, I mean, he had 3,504 yards. And
right.
That's still not a bad yardage number for a quarterback.
Especially missing
not
those
at all.
To put yeah. up.
Right.
Yep. So let's look at touchdowns next. His career high is 28. His low is 29. So let's set the over-under at 25.5 as far as touchdowns he's going to throw this year. We'll start with you.
This one's a hard one because I really want him to throw more than 20-something touchdowns. I'm gonna take the under.
Well, the over-under is at 25.5, so no matter what, he's going to throw
more,
20
right?
touchdowns.
I'm going to take the under on this one, but very, very little bit, just for the mere fact that the running game should be a bigger factor. And then you also got to put DeSean Jackson in there, too. They can throw it back to him and let him run wild on the field because that's what he does best. So I'm going to go with the under on that.
All right. What about you, Mark?
You know, it's funny because we're going to go opposites because I'm going to go with the over. I think he does throw I think he does get over that mark that you set there, Eric. And I feel like it's because, again, going back to like Phil said and like we talked about in the last question, again, back to the run game. Last year we saw the run game open up quite a few times for O.J. Howard. O.J. Howard all alone on the left side of the field, touchdown. I see a lot more of that happening because the run game is going to be better. That's why I go the under on the yardage because I don't anticipate the passes being long or having to be long bombs in order for us to score. I anticipate us to eat up yardage on the ground, and then when we get into the red zone or close to the red zone, the play calling to get creative and make it so that Jameis can make an easy throw into the end zone. That's kind of the way I anticipate it, but we'll see how it goes.
All right, and then let's go, instead of interceptions, let's go fumbles. And let's say I'll set this sort of low because he is going to be missing three games. So let's say 6.5 fumbles this year.
Oof, that's a solid
yeah,
number.
Like
there. Are you? Do you work for Vegas?
Yeah, no. I've been told by a lot of people. Like I do this. I kind of do this with every quarterback in the preseason, and everyone's like, damn, like, that's a really good line.
Yeah, right? That's, like, perfect.
I don't want to take an over or an under. Let's just go with 6.5. No.
You can push if you want.
I'm going to say over on this one, just because I think he's still got some kinks he's got to work out. It's just really hard to say under 6.5 or over 6.5. I feel like that's a middle number. All quarterbacks are going to hit, maybe.
Yeah, that's a tough number, man. But, Phil, I guess I'm going opposite of you again. Because I'm going to go the under, man. I'm going to go the under. I think that, again, I know we keep talking about the run game. But, as Bucks fans, this is what we have been looking forward to, is seeing the run game take some pressure off of Jameis. And I think because of the run game taking pressure off of Jameis, we see him fumble less than that. Fumble less than that because we don't have to put the ball in his hands at every play in order for us to succeed. You know what I'm saying? I think the run game helps with that. So I think I'm going to go with the under on that.
So let's talk about the run game really quickly because obviously both of you guys have bought it up a lot. I guess I'm not really sold on the run game. And here's why. It's not that I don't believe in necessarily the offensive line. I think the offensive line is average. Is that fair to say? Let's talk about the offensive line because obviously I think that's the most undersold in the media part of football and one of the things that a lot of even people who watch every game every week like I do on Game Pass or things like that miss is the offensive line. And I feel like people who watch a certain team over and over and over again have the best analysis of their offensive line. How is the Bucks offensive line, I guess?
Phil, go ahead.
I'll throw it to Phil.
Last year, they were a very young offensive line, I think. Bringing up Caleb Bednarik having to fill in. DeMar Dotson going out. He was our most solid offensive lineman. He graded very, very high in PFF all year round. There was holes for Doug Martin or Peyton Barber, whoever, to run through. I just think the teams we were facing just out physical, just played more physical than our offensive line, which ultimately demised our running game and keeping Doug Martin from being the player we've seen him in 2015. And that's why Peyton Barber came in and ran and he led the team in rushing yards. So I don't think they were as strong as they should have been, especially missing some key injuries. But this year, it's a totally different offensive line this year.
Awesome. So do you think they perform well or poorly?
No, I definitely think they're going to perform a lot better, especially bringing in Ryan Jetson as a center. Nasty guy. I'm sure you watched the game last year when they played the Dolphins and how he messed up Kiko Alonso after he had that nasty hit on their quarterback, Joe Flacco. That's what we need on that offensive line is that nasty face, just I'm gonna put you down on the ground no matter what. And you also have the guy we drafted this past year in Alex Kappe. He was a nasty guy too, throwing around people like they weren't anything. And then they moved Ali Marpet down next to Donovan Smith. That's just gonna solidify that side of the line and hopefully keep Jameis Winston and the running back clean and eating all day.
Okay, so as far as running backs go, let me just tell you where I am. Like, the running game gives me a little bit of pause, like how optimistic you guys are with it. Because, A, I did like Jaquizz Rodgers last year. I thought he was phenomenal in some of the games he got. He wasn't as consistent as he needed to be, but there were times where he showed flashes, so I can see the optimism there. Charles Sims is a great receiving threat, but I wouldn't necessarily consider him a between the tackles runner, but it seems like you guys are really, both of you, is it fair to say, in just kind of one word, is it fair to say that both of you guys like Ronald Jones the second?
I personally do like Ronald Jones, especially watching him light up some of the teams he played in college, getting those big chunks of yardage, falling forward, kicking the speed as much as he can. That's what our offense needs, especially in the running back position.
Yeah,
go for it, Mark. Sorry.
No. I was just gonna say, I think Ronald Jones brings an explosiveness to the offense that we haven't seen from the running back position since Doug was at his best. And not only that, I'm actually a huge Peyton Barber fan. I think Barber played really, really well when he was needed. And so I'm hoping between him and Ronald Jones, you get to see kind of that 1-2 punch that is sort of becoming important to see on good teams around the league. A lot of good teams have the 1-2 punch that everybody talks about. The most memorable, I guess the recent memory one that pops to my head is the Titans, DeMarco and Derrick Henry. So DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry there. So I'm looking forward to seeing some of that. But I think that the combination of adding a running back and improving the offensive line, I think that's kind of what makes me and Phil so excited about the run game, is you're looking at improvement on both fronts. And so we would hope to see an improvement as an overall rushing offense.
Yeah. I mean, Ronald Jones just kind of gives me pause because he just reminds me a lot of Christian McCaffrey. And in some ways, that's not a bad thing. But, like, Christian McCaffrey got to be like I said, I watch before the podcast. I watch very little college football, but I watch a lot of the Pac-12.
Right.
And seeing just a lot of Ronald Jones II and Christian McCaffrey, like, they're very similar backs, and that kind of worries me because when Christian McCaffrey got to the NFL, obviously he's a great satellite back. He is a great pass catcher. He is phenomenal in their offense. But when you think of a running game, he doesn't really establish that. He can't really run behind the tackles. And the way USC used Ronald Jones II last year was not always through the tackles. It was a lot of toss plays. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of screens. It was a lot of Sam Darnold kind of wheel route things. I guess I just worry about his ability to run between the tackles. Do you guys kind of have that concern? Or I guess I'll throw it to you, Mark, for this one, as you're a guy who watches a lot of UCLA.
I do watch a lot of UCLA, and that means that I despise USC. But setting that aside, no, I you know, at that point in the draft where Ronald Jones fell to us, it was a good pick. And I don't really have the same pause, honestly, Eric. I think that I know your comparison to McCaffrey. I can totally see that because I saw a lot of McCaffrey too. But I don't personally see the same. I don't see them as the same player personally. I think it'll look differently in Dirk Cutter's scheme. I kind of feel like the Panthers took McCaffrey to be what he is, and they don't really require him, or didn't really require him, to run through the tackles. Now, if they had, I don't think he would have succeeded, like you're saying. That was my thing all along with him pre-draft, was he couldn't run between the tackles to me. I don't see it. But the Panthers, I feel like, were more than happy and okay with that because, honestly, they didn't really need it. They had Jonathan Stewart, and they are just handing it to Jonathan Stewart and then tossing it to McCaffrey out of the backfield. But I think you'll see it a little bit differently with Ronald Jones because of the system he's in, because of the way Dirk Cutter likes to use his backs. I think it'll be a little bit different. And I don't really, like I said, I don't really see that comparison, but I am definitely excited to see Ronald Jones play.
Right. The running game, you guys both love that. Let's talk a little bit about the receivers, and let's talk specifically about Mike Evans, because I feel like he and, honestly, a receiver also in the division, Michael Thomas, are two guys who, like, when you talk about the top five wide receivers in the league, you might lump them in as a number five, but in the division, they're both kind of really overshadowed, of course, by Julio Jones.
Yeah.
Do you think Mike Evans is underappreciated?
I definitely do. More so in the national media. On the Buccaneers, they absolutely love the guy. They believe in him no matter what. I know. So basically what I'm trying to get at is, you know, Mike Evans holds a high standard for himself. You know, he puts up 12 touchdowns in 1 year, then, you know, he had kind of an off year. This past year, you know, he broke a little bit over 1,000 yards. I think the whole thing with him is he needs to honestly put up Julio Jones numbers, have a couple 100-yard, 150-yard-plus games, and really show people, you know, I am that threat that people have to think about every single down, because you're not going to know what I'm going to do. So it's all about him gaining that respect. But overall, he's a phenomenal player. He makes our offense just open up and takes away people from covering other people because they're afraid of what he's going to do. So he's definitely underappreciated in the national light.
Right. Absolutely. So let me throw this one to you then, Mark. So DeSean Jackson, obviously they bought him in last year. Perhaps it's just a product of the Bucs not being in the national spotlight as much, but I felt like kind of overall last year, Jackson didn't really perform the way they wanted him to. Is that a fair assessment?
You know, I don't think that it was necessarily that he performed, that he didn't perform the way they wanted it to. I kind of feel like, and Dirk Cutter talked about it a little bit, I feel like they just didn't exactly put him in the right positions. There was a lot of attempts at run as fast as you can, and I'm going to throw it to you. And Jameis's deep ball is not the most accurate thing you've ever seen in your life. So I think that it was a combination of him not being put in a position to succeed, and I think that this year we'll see him play better. Towards the end of the year, you saw him really getting in the open field. And that's where I think Deshaun is at his best, is when he's in the open field. Bucks media has talked about it a lot as well. That's where he's at his best, when he's in the open field. Give him a slant and let him go. And I feel like that's something that we didn't see as much. We saw a lot of deep bombs, but we didn't see that open field, toss to him, sometimes even in the backfield, letting him catch a or get a reverse play, that kind of thing. Those kind of things that make his speed more obvious and make his speed more of a tool on the football field. So I think he still has it, and I think he'll continue to perform well. But I think this year specifically, we should see a better Deshaun than we saw last year.
Right, absolutely. Moving back, a guy I did really like last year on the Buccaneers, who I saw, and maybe it wasn't every game, but especially you recall back to the Giants game that they played last year.
Right.
O.J. Howard. I thought that coming out of a draft, he was one of my favorite players coming out of a draft. Obviously, rookie tight ends don't have a history of producing in the NFL. But he had his moments last year. Do you think this is the year he kind of breaks out?
I definitely do think that he's going to break out this year, especially since Dirk Cutter figured out, hey, I can hide this guy and they're not going to know where he's at. Then again, you also have the NFL teams that are watching film. We got to keep an eye on O.J. Howard. But he runs very, very precise running lanes and his slants. And, he's very precise about the things that he hits. And he's also very good at blocking, which is a big part of being a tight end, too. And he can feed off of Cameron Brate, because we all know Cameron Brate is an amazing pass catcher also. So I think having that dual head is just going to make O.J. Howard better. And it's going to give Jameis Winston or Ryan Fitzpatrick another security blanket, knowing that they can throw this guy and he's going to at least get me, the 4 or 5 yards that I need, or the big explosive play to kind of get him back into the game.
Right, absolutely. What do you think a little bit, speak a little bit about O.J. Howard's skill set. What kind of sets him apart, Mark?
I mean, the guy is big, he's fast, and nobody knows how he fell to 19. I really don't understand how he fell to 19 last year to the Bucks.
Wild.
I mean, super exciting. Yeah, wild, absolutely. Super exciting for him to fall to the Bucks at 19. In regards to him kind of breaking out and having that year, I think the part that we see a lot of Dirk Cutter doing is using both Cam Brate and O.J. Howard. So I don't know if we'll be able to really say that it'll be a breakout year for him, but I do expect him to be involved more. The guy's big, he's fast, he's strong, he can block at the point of attack, which was one of the main reasons that we drafted him. A lot of people, when we did take him at 19, a lot of people were like, why are you guys taking a tight end? You guys have one of the best ones in the league in Cam Brate. But the thing with it is that he could block, and that's what set him apart from Cam. You have a receiving threat in Cam, but now OJ, you have the same speed, if not faster. He's taller, he's stronger, and he can block at the point of attack for the run game. And that in of itself is invaluable to this Buccaneers offense. So I'm excited to see what he does next year. I keep saying I'm excited, but I really am. I'm excited for the whole Buccaneers team to see what they got next year. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that you're right on O.J. Howard. I was also really surprised that he fell to 19. And the thing that, especially watching that Giants game, was just his speed. His speed is insane.
Yeah.
And, if they can, there is a specific play that I have in mind where they ran a wheel route to him almost, and he was just wide open in open space, and his speed in the open field was insane. And if they can design more plays like that for him, I feel like he is going to be one of the next really special tight ends that's coming into the league.
Yep.
All right, here's a hot take that I have that probably the rest of the national media wouldn't really be into. I think the Bucs quietly have the best pass rush in the league. Am I right?
That's music to my ears, Eric. That is music to my ears. I think you're right. I think you're right. But the question is, are we going to see it on paper? Because a lot of things happen on paper, but we got to see it on the field. I would agree with you 100%. The guys that we added, Vinnie Curry, Jason Pierre-Paul, already next to Gerald McCoy, one of the best defensive tackles in the league. And you put all those guys on the same line, not to mention the winning that they bring to the team, right? The level we brought in Bo Allen, and he also was with the Super Bowl team, like Vinnie Curry was with the Super Bowl team last year with the Eagles. And so it's really, I think, not only is there a new swagger to that defensive line that we haven't seen before, but there's also the players there to execute that. I mean, it's one thing to have swagger. It's another thing to have talent completely. And I think we're kind of seeing the formation of both. Not only the addition of players, but coaches. Brenton Buckner comes in for the fired Jay Hayes, and just in the short videos we've seen, look, we can't tell what's going on behind closed doors, but in the short video that we've seen from Bucks Media, he looks fired up. He's getting on the guys. He's making sure that they're giving it their best effort. And then you also draft Vita Vea. I mean, the additions to the defensive line have been huge, and I really do expect to have, and I think the Buccaneers expect to have, the best pass rush in the NFL. And I feel that they would be satisfied with nothing less than that.
Yeah, let's talk about the coaching for a second, because I think one of the number one things that frustrates me about the Buccaneers is Dirk Koetter. I don't think he's a good NFL coach, and I honestly don't understand how he survived last year, the expectations that that team had, and just how monumentally they flopped. What are both of your kind of feelings about Dirk Koetter as a coach, and like, how many wins does he have to get this year to keep his job? And we'll start with you, Phil.
Honestly, I think it's got to be another 9-7 season to keep Dirk Koetter here. As much as I like Dirk Koetter, and I know the players like him, fighting for him towards the end of the season when they literally had nothing to fight for. They're already out of the race for everything. He's definitely got to figure out a way to make his offense score touchdowns and to win games. And so I'm going to put that at 9 wins. I think that's the only thing that would really keep him. If he makes the playoffs, they're definitely keeping him, because he figured it out. He turned it around.
Right. What about you, Mark?
You know, I think Koetter gets a little bit of a bad rap. I personally, myself, have been a part of that quote-unquote bad rap. Last year, I really struggled with some of his play calls in the red zone. I still feel that some of the play calls were questionable. We really struggled in the red zone as an offense. But I think that Koetter really has done an okay to above average job, or average to above average job. I don't think he deserves as much of the heat as he gets. In fact, we actually had one of our writers, Robert Green, who writes for Full Press Coverage, which is where we're both from. He wrote an article about it, and he was just kind of talking about how both sides of the ball have shown that they can be effective. And so it's there. It just needs to be put together, because we saw a couple years ago with we had a 5-game win streak where the defense played really well. We've had times where the offense was soaring at an all-time high, but sometimes injuries have been an issue, and sometimes it has been execution of the plays. But I don't think that Koetter deserves as much heat as he gets. And I know, look, a lot of those things fall on the head coach. That's the head coach of the football team. So it's almost like anything that goes wrong is his fault. And I think Koetter understands that. But I think some of the criticism has been unfair towards him. So I think that I think 8 to 9 wins, like Phil said, would be important. But it's not necessarily as much for him to keep his – I mean, of course it's for him to keep his job. But I mean in the sense of, like, the whole team needs 8 to 9 wins. Jameis needs 8 to 9 wins. I mean, this isn't just, you know, just Dirk on Dirk. Jameis needs 8 to 9 wins. The defense has to play way better than it's been playing under Mike Smith. There's a lot of things that are riding on that 8 to 9 wins. It's not necessarily like if we don't get those wins next year, we'll fire Koetter and suddenly everything's going to be gravy. It's not going to be that way. We need Jameis to perform well. The defense has to be better. And I think as a football team, they have to be better. And that's something that Jason Light has talked about, something that Dirk Koetter has talked about. As a whole, as a unit, they have to be better. And yeah, I think Dirk is a part of that for sure. But he's the head coach, and so he does get a lot of heat. So I understand that train of thought for sure.
Okay, guys, so if that sounded like it ended a little abruptly, it's because it did. Phil's recording cut out a little bit early, so we weren't able to air the last 20 minutes of the podcast, but you didn't miss much. We talked about how the Buccaneers have a rough go of it in the NFC South, and if they were in any AFC division, they would probably win it because of the depth they have especially on defense. Then we kind of talked about how big a year this is for the Buccaneers coming up. Jason Light, this is a huge year for him. Dirk Koetter, a huge year for him. And a big year for Jameis Winston. The guys also gave some record predictions. Phil said they would go 10-6, and Mark said they'd go 11-5. I, however, am not such an optimist. I said they would go 5-11, which they said was fair because they haven't been good for a long time, and until they are good, it's hard to buy into them. Either way, the Buccaneers present a fascinating roster and a team I'm really excited to watch, especially when Jameis Winston gets back in 2018. If you want to follow the guys, their Twitter handles are at Phil Schwag, and Mark's Twitter handle is at BucksFan02. All right, guys, thank you very much for listening. You're hearing this show on Monday night or Tuesday. We will have a show out. Well, actually, yes, you will hear this show Monday night because I'm about to put it out. We'll have a show out on Tuesday and then a show on Thursday and one on Friday as well. And that will kind of wrap up our team previews for the month. Thanks to all the bloggers and people who came on to talk about their individual teams. That was great. We're going to have a bunch of new people on in August as we kind of talk more about the preseason and start going through divisional round previews. We'll start doing the two shows a week patterns starting in about the first week of August. And then we'll flip back to our normal schedule, as I said last podcast. All right, guys. Thanks a lot for listening. If you haven't heard it already, go back and listen to the Chris Wessling podcast. It's a great time. It was really last second, so I wasn't able to hype it up as much as I would like to have, but it's a super good podcast. I had a really good time. I think it's one of the best I've ever recorded, so go back, go check that out. It's a ton of fun to listen to, and yeah. So thanks, guys, for listening, and we will see you tomorrow. Peace out. Follow us on Twitter at EndZonePod. If you have any suggestions, questions, or you just want to shout out on the pod, send an email to endzonepod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.